Hello and welcome to the very first DLC Anxiety on the road interview. Today I'm here with the wonderful Malminder girl here in the centre of London, putting your questions all about therapy to Malminder. So Malminder, thank you so much for being here. For everyone who may not know about yourself, can you just give a little introduction of why the centre of London for your clinic, how long you've been doing therapy for, and how you got into it?
Well, thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure.
I have been here in London pretty much most of my life, personally living here. But I started out in my practice down the road at number two, a good sort of almost 10 years ago. Before that, I was working from home and just doing home visits. So
people coming into your home for those
sessions? Not anymore, but okay. There was a time.
Yeah.
When I was doing that, that was about 10, 11 years ago now.
So what made you go into therapy? Why did you have a passion for it? Is it because maybe you had anxiety or mental health for yourself, and you saw that therapy was beneficial? What was the main reason that you thought this is the career path I want to do?
Well, actually, before I became a therapist, I was working in gaming.
Okay.
And I was head of operations for International. So, and at the time, I was out in Argentina for work, and there was so much conflict between the US team and the International team. It was just like this. Mm-hmm. I said to my boss at the time, because at the time I was in my mid-20s, so quite a long time ago, I said to my boss, I can't do this anymore. I'm leaving. And my boss said, don't leave. Learn how to manage conflict.
Good advice.
And that's what I did. So I first started learning, things like coaching, team coaching, conflict management, out in Buenos Aires in Argentina, whilst I was working in my full-time office job.
So this was like your side thing?
Side
that you
thing,
do
yeah.
Once you've done your job.
Yeah. So, but the things I didn't know, I was going to end up being a therapist.
Okay.
So I started out doing that, but my teacher who taught me, she was a coach, a therapist, a hypnotherapist, a crystal healer, a meditation teacher. She did everything. Mm-hmm. And so we used to meet each morning, and I used to have a three-hour lesson with her every morning while I was out there. That was my first stint into it.
Yeah.
And then the sort of tools that I learned there, I applied them within my team at the company, and that worked reasonably well.
I was going to say, did you see results instantly?
Yeah. Well, not instantly, over time, because for me, I was practicing as well. But the beauty of my job at the time is I got to travel quite a lot. And because of that, I've been taught by practitioners and teachers from all over the world, because every time I was posted somewhere else, I would go on and do another course. And so
it's really good gaining experience from all these different people and putting it together.
Yeah, so Spain, Buenos Aires, America, Bali, I learnt lots, Germany, just all over the place. Mm. Singapore as well. But the thing is, what happened was I thought I was going to stay in this gaming company and just climb the corporate ladder. But I enjoyed the coaching work a lot more. And that's when, I think it was in about 2008, 2009, I started out originally as a coach.
Right.
But back then, nobody knew what coaching was. So when I was walking around saying, oh, I'm a life coach or a business coach, people were like, what's that?
I remember that time as well.
So that was how I got into it. But I noticed the ceiling with coaching, just like with everything will have its ceiling, right? Mm. There's only so far you can take it. And because of that, then I started to study other things, namely hypnotherapy.
Okay.
And then I went on to emotional freedom technique, which is EFT, neuro-linguistic programming, crystal healing too, meditation, psychotherapy, all sorts of things. And since then, I think since 2008, I've been doing some kind of course every year.
Right.
Actually. Just because I love learning.
Because I know you do courses for your clients as well.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which is amazing. But these were for yourself.
Yeah, education. Educational courses. So I'm always training. And I'm not talking about CPD, continual professional development, which all therapists should be doing. I'm talking about proper courses, you know. I went on to study postgraduate studies in hypnotherapy.
Yeah.
Started a master's, but at the end of the year, I was the only one on the course of a class of 30.
You were the last one left.
I was the last one left, and then my teacher at the time basically said, "Are you sure you want to continue?" Because it's tough, you know, trying to fit in 2.5 days of academic study per week on top of being a therapist and running your own private practice. That's a lot of work.
I think it's really important to showcase this, that being a therapist is not just like, oh, I want to become a therapist and you set up a practice. There's a lot of work that goes into it. Like you said, that's years of experience doing your coaching work, learning off all these different coaches around the world. But then you said it's not once you get the qualifications, so you do your coaching, you change over to hypnotherapy and start doing your therapy, it's then a continued thing. You never stop learning, never switch off.
I personally never stop learning. And every time I start something new, I try my best to put the old learning to one side so I can see it with fresh eyes. So you just, because you take something away from every teacher, right? So I think that's been a really important part of my journey. And I've had also personally lots of therapy, because to qualify as a coach, you have to have so many hours of coaching. To qualify as a hypnotherapist, you have to have so many hours of hypnotherapy yourself. To qualify in crystal healing, meditation, you know, every single course comes with, you know, 100 hours or this number.
Is that because they want you to see what it's like for the client? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So, and what I found is during the psychotherapy course, previous hours that I've done in therapy are not suitable. So, you know, they're very, very strict every single course I've been on, which is important. But they do that probably because they're expecting the practitioner just to stay on that only.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas me, I've danced around a lot. But what it means is when clients come to me, I'm taking very much like a combined holistic view when I do therapy. And you're in the hands of a therapist who has really learned from teachers from around the world, all sorts of ages, backgrounds. Mm. And I've spent like tens of thousands of pounds in my education over the years.
All sorts of these different techniques and different viewpoints, like you said, that you can put together and tailor make for the individual, which I think is important. So we've got the community questions, and you guys put over 1,000 questions towards Malminder. We won't be asking all 1,000, but I did handpick a good between 8 and 10 questions that I'll put to Malminder, and we'll get your answers to your therapy questions.
I will grab this.
Malminder, the first question is, I've been told by multiple professionals that I should try talking therapy. I hate talking to people and I hate opening up. Do you have any tips on overcoming this and any advice?
Interesting. That's an interesting
one. It's a
very good question. Yeah, that's a really good question. So I think most people would think, you know, our form of communication as humans is through speaking. Mm-hmm. So that's probably why lots of people have said, try talking. But if you feel uncomfortable talking, try journaling or expressing your thoughts and feelings in other ways. Talking is one way. Body language is another way. Doing something creative, painting or something like that is also another way. Journaling is also a good way.
Is there anything that they could do with a therapist, but it not be talking therapy, but they get some benefit out of it?
Yeah.
Like go and maybe do meditation or mindfulness maybe?
Yeah. I mean, they might be well placed considering somebody like a music therapist or an art therapist or something like that. That would be an art therapist might be a good one in this case.
And what happens in art therapy?
Well, art therapy, they'll use the creative process of producing art as therapy.
Okay.
I'm not an expert in it, but I do know that that is less of the chit-chat, less of the talking, and more of expressing. But so I think if you're going to seek therapy, look at alternative therapies like that, like art therapy. If you're not ready to even take that step for therapy, you know, just think about other ways that you can express yourself through journaling. Or something like that.
Journaling really helped for me, because I felt that when I went through an anxiety disorder, so it was a panic disorder, so I was dealing with panic attacks like every other day. And you have these ruminating thoughts that are going on. And it was just really good to put it, jot it down on a piece of paper, because it felt like it was coming from this inward thinking and out into the open. So journaling was really good for me. And what else was good was having someone next to you, a friend, and just opening up and being honest when you're feeling anxious. So I'd say, hey, we're walking down the street. I know there's no reason that I should be feeling anxious, but I feel anxious. Yeah. And that had really helped me as well. It was almost like getting this weight off my shoulder.
Yeah, so it's naming the emotion, which is always useful. Another, just a final thing I sometimes recommend to clients is to open their phone and voice record their feelings. Okay. and not even necessarily listen back to it. You can do that's taking things to stage two, I would say, but you can also hit record and just speak like a monologue, just to get it all out.
That's really good advice. That's a I good like one that too. One. The next question, Malminda. If my therapist upsets me, what should I do and what's the protocol? Good question.
Yeah, that's a great question for your therapist.
Be open directly and honest with them.
Yeah, and so it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because you've employed somebody to help you through difficulties and your emotions, and you might be feeling, how can I possibly go back and say that I'm upset with this therapist? Is it going to change the way that they deliver the therapy? Mm. You know, there might be some anxiety or worry around that.
Because with anxiety, it's all the what if questions, isn't it? So like you say, what if I'm invalidated? Or what you say, is it going to change the course? But you think being open and honest is really important.
Yes, and I realise it's hard.
Yeah.
It's not easy, because you know, if you do feel upset by your therapist, you're going to have this thing of, I should say something, but I can't, and because it might ruin their relationship. Or what's the therapist going to say? What if the therapist invalidates me? A good therapist shouldn't. Mm-hmm. All therapists should be in supervision. So if they do get offended by you speaking up, they should take that up with their supervisor.
Okay, that's right.
So just bear that in mind, and that's a good thing, just to always make sure that your therapist has a supervisor.
Right. So that could be a question that you ask at the start of therapy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. You should have a supervisor. But it is important. So what I say to clients from the get-go, and quite regularly throughout therapy, is, hey, I'm not precious about the style of delivery, the techniques that I've used or anything. I didn't invent any of them.
Okay.
I'm literally borrowing things off people I've learned over the years. Mm-hmm. And we're just seeing what sticks and what doesn't. Mm-hmm. So you have to tell me if I talk too much, talk too little, whatever. You know.
That's great. So you almost guide. Again, I say it a lot on the platform, that an anxiety recovery is all about an individual approach, not one size fits all. And it's great to hear that you're using that in therapy.
Yeah.
So it can be individual approach for 10 different clients with, like you say, different ways of doing what works for them, what doesn't work for them.
Yeah. And because of my background, I do try and marry up what I've learned or what I think could work best for the client based on what the client's saying. Mm-hmm. And that takes obviously a bit of preparation time. So I usually spend about an hour preparing every therapy session I deliver, just to try and get that right.
Right.
You know, so, that, but yeah, there's lots of things that we can do, but to take an open approach to this, because you're actually helping yourself and helping the therapist to do a better job when you are open and
honest. That's true. Yeah. So the next question, Malminda, I've been on medication for my anxiety and I've seen good results. Would therapy further these results for me, or is it best to stay on the medication and not do therapy, is the question.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, therapy can certainly help in helping you to make sense of your experience, mm-hmm. And to teach you the coping skills and management skills, so that you can help yourself in the future a little bit more. Most of my clients, and I think probably a lot of therapists would agree, lots of clients will see us whilst they are on medication.
Yeah.
You know, the vast majority almost, actually.
When you look at the science says a combination of therapy, yeah. talking therapy and medication has the best results yeah. for anxiety in large studies as well. Mm. So I definitely don't think it's a one or the other.
Yeah.
I think, again, an individual approach, what works best for yeah. you. That's good to hear that a lot of people are on medication and benefit from therapy as well.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So it's, you're right. I mean, there's lots of studies out there that show taking certain medication plus therapy is the winning combination. Mm-hmm. So I'd say definitely it's certainly wise to look into having therapy and, you know, talk to a few therapists, see who you gel with. You know, everybody has a different style and approach, but it will probably benefit you because you'll learn how to cope with certain styles of thoughts and thought patterns and things like that, which obviously you won't get from the medication.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's a really good point. And I've had a lot of people in the community say things such as, they've been on medication and, like you say, that wasn't the root out of an anxiety disorder, but there was a heightened level of anxiety, and it was able to bring that level down, so then they can engage in therapy and speak to a yeah. therapist and get the best out of yeah. the yeah. talking therapy. I've heard that a lot.
Yeah, so just think of it like a glass that's just completely full. Mm-hmm. of liquid, and you can't put any more in because there's just too much going on. And think of it in the way that medication will bring that liquid down so you have some space. That's right. You know, that's what the, when you have quite a high anxiety, let's say, the medication will just bring it down a couple of notches so you have bandwidth.
Yeah.
So you have mental bandwidth, so you have the space to peruse, to think, to create something different in your mind. So you know, not that you need masses of mental space, but just a little bit will help. But of course, in therapy, the idea is to get more of that space for yourself.
Yeah. yeah. Do we ever get an empty cup?
I don't think so. No, not completely empty, no. It's no. a bit like, is the house ever going to be super clean at all times?
No.
No. So because once you've finished cleaning the kitchen, it's probably time to go back and do something yeah. else. So, yeah, it's a bit, think of it as housekeeping.
Yeah, and I think that's important as well. If you've, so like myself, I went through a panic disorder. I engaged with a therapist to do with the passing of my father. So they helped with the grief side of it. I did exposure therapy for the panic attacks, which really helped. But I think it's important to know that even if you're not dealing with panic attacks every day, or you're not dealing with heightened levels of anxiety, it's still good to see a therapist.
Yeah.
You don't have to be in the middle of an anxiety disorder. Yeah. It's just good for your overall well-being.
Well-being and mental health. Yeah, absolutely. You don't need to be in the middle of a personal crisis or, you know, some catastrophic event to then think, oh, now I'm going to have therapy. Although that is a good time to have therapy, yes. If you're not having therapy. But it's the kind of things you'll learn in therapy, coping strategies, management strategies, things to make you resilient, and are all going to be helpful for life. Also, a good thing in therapy is to acknowledge and credit yourself for the good things in your capabilities and your qualities and your talents, and to recognize those. So therapy kind of shows that to you in a clear mirror as well.
Yeah.
And that will give you the confidence as well to in life and going forward.
I say that a lot because when you're going through an anxiety disorder, you've got this inner critic that's telling you that you're not going to overcome it, telling you that this is you now, you're going to always feel anxious, you're always going to deal with panic attacks. And you have this inner narrative that's just telling you you're not good enough, that these feelings are sensations that you should be worrying about. So like you say, just change. I imagine therapy helps you to just change that narrative or see that there is another way of thinking.
Well, yeah, just to acknowledge the whole of who you are to, yeah, and get you used to doing that. Because with these trains of thought that just go on about, oh, I'm awful, I'm this, I'm that, I'm not going to achieve anything, come to anything, my face is this, my body's that, all of that whole whatever internal dialogue it is, that is in and of itself so exhausting to live with, and then still be expected to wake up in the morning, catch the bus or the train, go to work and and be normal.
And then you have
this sort of thing. So with therapy, we challenge that voice. We say, actually, yes, you might be feeling this, but also, did you know that you have this whole treasure trove of goodies inside you?
And so it's that, holding that, that inner critic accountable.
That inner critic's going to say, it's going to slam shut the treasure chest and say, no, that's not real. So it's also getting used to acknowledging and crediting yourself for your achievements and talents and hidden qualities and, you know, talents that you might not even be aware of now, that, you know, at currently, because not all of the talents and the skills and the abilities sprout out of you when you're young. Some people find out that they have a hidden talent for this or that or the other when they're 60, 65, 70. You know, doesn't all have to come out before you're 12.
You're never too old to find a hidden talent.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you don't give that any time of day, or you just think it's all, you know, fairy stuff and, you know, that kind of thing, then you won't find it either. And therapy can be good for that. In particular, coaching style of therapy.
What I find a lot is with this inner critic, so like you say, holding it accountable and knowing that thoughts are not facts. But I hear this a lot and I understand why this pattern occurs, is that someone will have a thought, they'll try and avoid the thought. Then we know that anxiety pushes you towards the thought because it's thinking, why am I trying to avoid this? Is this something we need to pay attention to? Is this something dangerous? But then when they have a bodily reaction to it, so when the anxiety starts to rise, the heart starts to race, they start to feel sweaty, they almost see that as like a confirmation of, oh, that thought must have been true because it's now making me feel this way. So I think it's really important to say, firstly, thoughts are not facts. But secondly, the sensations as well. Just because you're feeling a sensation doesn't mean that that thought's any more true.
Yeah, just because you're feeling that sensation doesn't necessarily mean that it's validated that thought as fact and that's true. And that's absolutely spot on what you've said. Because these thoughts, they'll bubble up and then most people will try and overly control or overly avoid. One of two things, control or avoid, and rather than acknowledging it or addressing it, because let's face it, those thoughts are scary.
They are.
If they weren't, we probably would face them and we could face them by ourselves. We could work through it on the way home one day or whatever, right? The rise of physical sensations, don't be fooled by that. Don't think that that means that this is right.
I'm thinking when I was in the middle of the panic disorder, when I had that, these thoughts, ruminating thoughts, and then I had those sensations, I just remember falling into the trap of, oh, this must be real because it's making me feel this way. And I think so many people fall into that trap, and it's an important thing to highlight.
Absolutely. Because some of those sensations and symptoms can be quite visible as well.
Yes.
Some of them aren't, you know, the thoughts aren't visible, but some of them are: shaky hands, trembling, face going red, sweating, you know. And then that, of course, in and of itself creates a whole different layer of anxiety, because now everybody can see that I'm, you know, sweating or trembling and, you know, all of those sorts of things. People can see this on top.
Worrying about what other people say. What my advice I say to all that inward thinking that you're thinking about yourself, try and picture that everyone else around you has that inner dialogue, that inner narrative, and they're probably not paying as much attention to you as you think they are doing, which I think...
Most people really, I say to clients... You know, most people are just in their own world, thinking about their own life, you know, thinking about their husband or their partner or their boss or what they're having for dinner or did they do this or did they do that. Very few people depart from their own life and mind of thinking to give you like 1,000% attention.
Yeah.
You know, people are just too glued on their own stuff.
No, definitely. I always say reality is an individual thing, so we've all got our different realities. So I think we've got enough time for two more questions, Malminder. So the next question is, I really want to start therapy, but I'm on a budget. Is there a set amount of sessions that you'd recommend so that I can have lasting results? So if they're on a budget, what would your advice be to them? Can they just do 4 or 5 sessions if that's all they can afford?
Yeah, that's a really good and interesting question. Obviously, it depends on the nature of the issue that they want to work on and what they're hoping to achieve. But I would say to, you know, get started at least. Let's put it this way. 6 to 8 sessions, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you would say that there is an amount that you need to be doing, really?
I would say so. To get started with that, have a chat with your therapist from the start saying, this is my budget. This is what I can afford for now. Mm-hmm. What, you know, what do you think is reasonable to expect in this frame of time? And can I... pick up therapy again once those 6 or 8 sessions are over some months down the line.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that. So if someone has the budget for 6 to 8 sessions, but then they have a gap in the therapy, is that still okay?
I think it can be. This is a discussion you have to have with your therapist because everyone works differently.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of you have to see me every single week for the next year. That's not my approach or style. Some therapists do it that way. I personally don't. But it really depends on the therapist and really what you want to work on, because there is also, you know, we can't ignore the fact that... It's in session 5 or 6 that you start to get into the nitty gritty of things.
Right.
You know, and no therapist will want to just leave you there, because that your therapy sometimes goes like this down before it goes back up.
Right. That's so interesting
what,
to
so,
know.
So what you don't want to do is stop there.
Yeah.
So, and that's why it's important to...
Are these all conversations that you would have with the client at the start?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So when you speak to your therapist, who or speak to a few different therapists, my advice is be as clear as you can be by writing it down first on a piece of paper. What is it? What's the general theme that you want to work on? Mm-hmm. So that when you speak to that therapist in a first session or an initial phone call, you can be very clear and concise, and you can ask them for their feedback, because therapists will be very clear on the phone on their style and what they can and can't do. Some therapists will say, well, you know what, let's get cracking and we'll see where we land. And some therapists will say, absolutely not, you need to be here for this much amount of time. And then trying to bend the therapist to a different way, there's just no point. You're better off just finding someone who matches up with that style.
No, that really makes sense. Another question that I remember, this was a while ago from the DLC community. Someone said, therapists, the ones that I've seen only have 2 approaches. It's either we go head in and tackle the issue straight on, or they want to look at past trauma or past issues, past experiences. In your opinion, do you think that's true, or do you think that's just maybe what they've experienced?
Oh, that's a good one as well. It really depends what you say to your therapist on that day,
right,
which will probably dictate what they do from there on. So, you know, the person who posed this question is absolutely right. I think therapists do get a reputation of taking people into their past, into their childhood, or, you know, hitting it straight on. We do tend to have that reputation because that's the big thing that people remember of us. So I guess that in a way, yes, but not always. It really depends what you bring to the therapist will dictate what the therapist does. So the more clear you can be on the outset on what you're hoping to achieve, what kinds of outcomes you'd like, you know, and that will help the therapist prepare.
So would you say that like a therapist might have five different clients, and they'll for three of them it may be suitable to look into the past experiences, but for two of them it may be suitable to go ahead and do things such as exposure therapies and mindfulness meditation, things like
that? It really depends. Everything is on an individual basis, so I wouldn't even you just don't know.
So the last question is, I really want to start therapy, however I don't like the idea of meeting in person. Do I get the same experience from video and or telephone consultations? Is in-person the preferred method as far as results go? And if it is, which is second best? So would video be better than telephone?
Great question. That will really depend on the therapist.
Okay.
Yeah, so that's the first question you want to ask the therapist, mm-hmm. or a series of therapists if you're interviewing therapists firsthand. Ask that question and get a feel for how they respond, because they might have a preference, in which case some of the styles of therapy and the interventions they use may lend themselves towards in-person, or maybe through lockdown they adjusted things over. But ultimately, what's going to work best here is what you feel most comfortable with. So if it is online, and you feel, you know, much more comfortable having therapy online, guess what? You're going to be able to open up more. You know, you might be able to sink deeper into the depths of your subconscious mind more and get, you know, get more out of it rather than in person, because you didn't want in person for whatever reason, the travel, the commute, the faff around that whole thing, you know. So
that's interesting that you said that. Because they're more comfortable, they'll be more likely to open up and hopefully get more out of the therapy session.
Yes.
No, that's really interesting, because I know a lot of people who have anxiety may just find coming to a therapy room intimidating for the first time.
Absolutely.
What would your advice be to them people who are like on the sideline, saying, I really want to go to therapy, but I'm scared of, like when you're scared of going to the doctors, I'm scared of going into the clinic. Do you have like any reassuring advice around that?
So going back to what I said earlier, the therapy is there to provide the right amount of challenge and support.
Yeah.
So if you start off online, you start to recognize, oh, I'm in safe hands here. I'm being supported. And then the challenge might be for you to leave home and come to the clinic. But that's something you can work through with your with your therapist. So presenting the challenge up front, if you don't want to have in person, on top of the issues that you want to work through, might be a little bit too daunting, might be too much. And it might be the reason why people don't end up having therapy, even if they do. So go with what's comfortable initially, because, you know, the therapist will be there to give you the support and the challenge as you move through.
I like what you mentioned throughout this discussion of when you seek out a therapist, and you've said it a few times, that it's important to go to more than one. It's important, you even said, interview them almost.
Yeah.
Because it's a two-way street. I know a lot of people who, oh, I need to see a therapist. Well, these deal with anxiety, so I'll go with them. Would you say that's the wrong approach to me?
I would say, and I say this to people who call me as well, one of the first things I say is, just give me a little overview of what's going on, and then I'll make an assessment. And if I feel it's my bag, if I think it's my kind of thing that I'm can support you with, I'll let you know. Otherwise, I'll try my best to recommend somebody else.
Yeah.
right? So for that reason, I would say speaking to a few different therapists beforehand, then making your decision is probably going to be better, because then you get a feel for the person. You want to feel supported, that there's that rapport, there's that connection, and ultimately that you feel safe, because you're going to be talking about a lot of stuff, a lot of personal stuff, and you want to ensure that you feel safe. And, you know, there's no one size fits all, you know, not in therapists, not as in clients, not as in approaches. That's why time and time again, when we've been speaking, I've made it very clear every single time, it really depends. So you need to ask as a client. And sometimes people call me, they saw me on Instagram or online or somewhere, and they'll ask me and I about therapy, if I think I can help them, da, 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 da. And I will ask, have you spoken to other therapists too?
That's a great question. It's really good to hear that.
Yeah.
And also, would you say if you don't, for some reason, like you say, we're all humans, we have different personalities, and that we can have personalities that clash even in the therapy room. Is it okay to switch therapists halfway through if you don't think it's going well for you?
Mm.
Is it okay to go? And have you had clients come to you who it didn't work with another therapist, but they come to you and your style's more suited to them and beneficial?
It does happen. I think the important thing here, because this is a kind of like a relationship you're getting into, right, as a client and as a therapist. And even with the best intentions on the outset, you might find a few sessions in, it's not quite right.
Yeah.
You know, it happens, right? Nobody has a crystal ball on the outset. So that is something that you need to discuss with the therapist and just say, something's not feeling it really, whatever it is, and hear what the therapist has to say.
Yeah.
It might be something that can be sorted out, or if not, then, you know, inform the therapist that you'd like to close this relationship in a way, you know. It happens. It does happen. And it's fine. It's okay. I think it's important not to just be dropping therapists like hot potatoes.
I think that's interesting. You say it's fine, it's okay. I think that's interesting to hear that from a therapist. Is there an aspect, if a client did say that to you, is there an aspect of you looking inwards and thinking, is there something I could have done better? Or is it just, like you say, it didn't gel, I understand that. And as a therapist, we understand that occasionally this may crop up.
Yeah, sometimes you got to take it on the chin.
Yeah.
Right. But this is why we have supervision.
Right.
Right. So if something like that crops up, I talk about it with my supervisor.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's why we have supervisors, to recognize, is this a theme now that's going on?
Okay.
Are all clients doing this?
Yeah.
Is it once in a while, you know?
Yeah.
You know,
is
there a
pattern?
Holding
yourself accountable.
Holding yourself as a therapist accountable.
Yeah.
You know, so that's important because, you know, as much as it can be a lonely experience for the client coming into the room because they're alone with their thoughts and their feelings, nobody else potentially understands, and then they talk with the therapist, it's also a lonely experience for the therapist as well.
Yeah.
Right. And that's why it's important to ensure that your therapist has regular supervision so that they can bounce around ideas with their supervisor and make sure that they're delivering the best job. Because when you share with a therapist, it stays typically, you know, it depends on the country in which you're having therapy and the rules and things, but typically it stays within the room.
Right.
Right. And that's fine. But because that therapist is seeing client after client after client, it's wise that they do also speak to a supervisor if there is something coming up that doesn't seem great for the client, you know.
No, that's great, and that's good to hear. Just holding yourself accountable. That's the end of the questions, Malminda. So that just leaves me to say thank you so much for doing this. Guys, this is the very first on-the-road interview. It's a whole series, the first stop, so you'll see us at the next stop. Malminda, for everyone
thank
who
you.
May not know where to find you on Instagram, if you can just let the community know your Instagram handle, also your website, and is there any exciting things you've got coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you for the interview. It
no
was
problem.
Great. It was very, very good and interesting questions. So keep those questions coming for your other interviews. Absolutely. All clients that book in for therapy with me now this autumn and winter will be gifted a care box, which has lots of goodies of all of the brands that I believe in, things that I've tried, like CBD balms, supplements, things like that, all sorts of things. I'll be announcing that in the coming weeks. My Instagram handle is malminda.gill.therapy, and you'll find all the resources, over all everything you could possibly need from that page.
Fantastic. Yeah. And you can access the website directly from your Instagram.
Yeah, you can access my website through the Instagram. And I think I have now over 350 blog articles on mental health, which I've been writing since 2014.
Yeah. And so I must say, I have seen a lot of those blogs and they're very, very good. So if you haven't checked them out, go and check them out. So guys, thank you so much for listening. I hope you found this interesting. Some great questions and some really good answers from Malminda. And until next time, thank you for watching and we'll see you again soon.